All right. We are, most of you know, studying Samson at this time. We have looked at several characters in the Bible, personalities in the Bible. And this is the last one that we're going to deal with. But he is a very interesting individual, as we have seen. And hopefully we're getting some good lessons from Samson. And they're lessons that are, for the most part, negative in nature, but that's okay. The Bible is filled with lessons that teach us what we should do and lessons that teach us what we shouldn't do. In fact, if you look at Titus chapter 2, you might remember what Paul said about the gospel of Christ. Actually, he refers to the grace of God, but the grace, of course, teaches us through and by the gospel. But Titus chapter 2, and at verse 11, very familiar verse. So it says, Titus 2, and the verse is 11. We'll read 11 and 12. It says, "For the grace of God has appeared, bringing salvation for all people, training us to renounce ungodliness and worldly passions." So that's what the Word of God does. And that is sort of fitting for Samson, because one thing he never learned is to renounce worldliness and ungodliness and those kind of things, as we have seen. And then, of course, there's the things that we should do. The grace of God teaches us to live with self-control, upright and godly lives in the present age. And so the point of it is, as we read and study the Bible and study these different people, there are going to be lessons of things we should do and things we shouldn't do. With Samson, it's almost entirely things that we shouldn't do, things we should avoid. And so, but hopefully we're learning those lessons, and we'll learn a few more of them tonight. So we come to what is probably the most famous part of the story of Samson's life, Samson and Delilah. And you remember, as we closed off, Samson had just a sliver of light. We got a little, really the only positive portion of the story of Samson with regard to his own personal character. He shows a little bit of faith there. He finally cries out to the Lord. And if you're taking notice, you'll remember that really, or you'll have noticed, that's the only time he cries out to the Lord in all of his story, all of the teachings about him. So it just says a little something about him. So he's elevated that time to be a judge, and he serves as a judge for the next 20 years. And so, you know, you kind of end on a positive note, but it doesn't last long. Because as we get into chapter 16, it takes a downturn immediately with regard to Samson in his character. And, you know, you kind of hope that being a judge for 20 years, maybe that being in that position of power, being in that position of authority and responsibility, that it might help him to mature a little bit, put some of those other things away that was characteristic of him, and that he'd just do better. But if you were hoping that, you'd be disappointed. Because, again, he immediately shows that he hasn't changed at all in the 20 years, rather, that he has been a judge. So you notice how it all begins there, just the very first few words there in chapter 16. Samson went down to Gaza. And Gaza was the oldest and the largest and the most important city of the Philistines. Remember, when they migrated from the Asia Minor area, if you recall, the Philistines weren't really originally Canaanites, but moved from that area and settled there at the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. And there were five cities that they settled in, and Gaza was the most important of them. You remember the other four? Gath was one. What was another one? Ekron. Yep, Ekron was one. Another one with a G. There's Ron. I didn't see Ron out there. Hey, Ron. And what was the other one with the G? Where did the big fella come from? Where'd Goliath come from? Gath, right. And then, remember, next one? Two more with an A. Ascalon was one. Ashdod was the other. Well, of those five cities, Gaza was the most important. And its importance basically was found in its location. It was located at the southern end of what you remember being called the Fertile Crescent. And it had a highway. It was a highway ran through, a very important one, that connected Egypt and Babylon and Assyria. And it was known as the gateway to Africa in the south and to Syria in the north. And so it was very strategic. And because of that, every great power, world power that arose in the Middle East conquered Gaza. Because they all realized, this is a strategic area that we need to have control of. And so that was Gaza. And it was the word Gaza meant strength. And perhaps because it was located on a hill that was 17 miles long. And it was a sort of a pleasant place. Though to the west, they had sand dunes that stopped you, obstructed the vision to the Mediterranean. But surrounding the city were olive groves and gardens and wheat fields. And we're told that there were a lot of sparrows and doves off through the city so that you could always hear the chirping of birds. And, you know, it is kind of paint a nice picture. The problem was that Gaza was completely corrupt, filled with wickedness and ungodliness. And so as we open up here in this particular place, you just wonder, again, here is Samson, and he's the judge of Israel. He has this important position and responsibility. And what does he do? He went to Gaza. Why in the world was he going there? And we find out very quickly, and we find that he hasn't changed at all. One of the things that we have learned, and we'll see again tonight with Samson, his Achilles heel was what? Women. And not just any women. He loved beautiful, seductive women. And he just couldn't control himself. It caused him to marry a foreigner, you remember, which was a violation of the law. And got him in trouble. And we see right away, as we open up this chapter, he went to Gaza, and there he saw a prostitute. And then as we go on, of course, we'll find very quickly that he falls in love with Delilah. And he just had this problem with women. And basically with lust. And it destroyed his life. It stopped him from being what God wanted him to be. He never was what God wanted him to be, so far as his character is concerned. He never did honor his Nazarite vow. He was always doing things that were sinful, almost at every turn. And most of it stemmed back to this problem with lust that he had, whether it was sensual or just a desire to do what was right in his own eyes. That was Samson. And it's amazing. It really caused him. He was intoxicated by this problem. And one of the things about lust we find is that it is a lot like a drug. It's a lot like being drunk. And men need to understand the seriousness of this kind of temptation that is very real in the world and that can ruin your life and certainly ruin Samson's life. but it's intoxicating. It's no coincidence that the Bible often will tie together the idea of drunkenness and lust, because they're very closely related, and that they ruin the mind. They cause people to act senselessly and do dumb things. Like as we read through this, we see the main thing, the main situation in this chapter is Samson's situation with Delilah, and he appears as if he is just absolutely without any smarts at all. I said that as nicely as I could. But what it really is, really, when you stop and think about it, he's a clever fella. You know, he's good with poems and things of that nature. He thinks fast on his feet and all kind. He's no dummy, but he sure acts like it. But that's what happens when you're intoxicated, whether it's with wine or whether it's with lust. It causes you to do dumb things. The first thing is going to Gaza. Let's remember, this is enemy territory. Like, this is the chief city of the Philistines, who still view him as a fugitive. He's putting himself in a dangerous situation. Can you imagine him pulling up there in his car and getting out and going over there to you know, here I am at Gaza. This is great. Big city. And what are you doing? You're the judge of Israel. But he went there for a particular reason. He went there because of women. And it just caused him to do just crazy things. Proverbs chapter 4. Someone read Proverbs chapter 4 and at verse 14 and 15. Verses 14 and 15. Someone read that for me. Proverbs chapter 4, verses 14 and 15. Kind of emphatic, isn't it? That verse 15. Pass by it. Avoid it. Don't go that way. Avoid the path of the wicked, the way of evil. We haven't still learned many in the church today. Haven't learned that lesson. You cannot go into places where the devil is dominating and think it's going to end well. There are certain places we should just not go. As Christians, there are places we should not want to go. There's places that should have no appeal to us. There should not have been anything appealing to Gaza, to Samson at all, if he was a godly man. But he wasn't. I told my class on Thursday morning, I believe, some time back of a time when we had to, the place I was preaching, we had to have a form, a special form, because the issue of the prom came up, and should we be allowing our children to go to the prom and, you know, engage in the modern dance and that sort of thing? And I said no, and someone got mad, and we had to have a special form about that. And then we had a preacher come in for a gospel meeting, and he got up and preached and said it's all right to send kids to the prom. And all the eyes went right to me. So we had a forum about that, and I was emphasized, of course, we know the modern dance leads to lasciviousness, plus in these proms we know the evil things that are there, drugs and alcohol, and that's not even disputable. I've told people before, I have in my library somewhere two letters that school sent me to warn parents about, if they're going to send their children to the prom, there's going to be drugs and alcohol there. Two different principles for two different schools, just letting the parents know, you know, we don't authorize it or anything, but it's going to be there. Why would we want to send our children to an event where there's going to be lust going on, lasciviousness going on along? And what happens when someone is taken over by lust and then you add alcohol to it? Good things are going to happen, right? Of course not. So anyway, we had to talk about it. And in the midst of the form, it came out, well, is there anything wrong with mixed swimming? And I better explain that, because in the class, I had someone come up to me after and said, "Well, you talking about blacks and whites swimming together?" I said, "No, I wouldn't talk about that at all. I'm talking about male and female dressed half naked in a pool together. Is that okay?" "No, that's not okay." Someone else in the forum asked, "Well, can we go to a bar as long as we don't drink?" And all of these things point to the same thing. Children of God wanting to go someplace where they have no business. Why do you want to go where the devil has so much influence? And when we don't go to these places, it may be that the world will frown upon us and think that we're strange or claim that we're just holier than thou or that sort of thing. But listen, it's better to be scorned by sinners than to be scarred by sin. It's better to just take whatever the world thinks about us, just so what? Remember what we said Sunday? We're more interested in pleasing God than man. And that's the way it should be. But Samson didn't have a grasp on any of that because he wanted to do what was right in his own eyes. He was intoxicated by lust. And we see this clearly in his life. And so he saw a prostitute. The word "saw" there, it means to gaze upon. He looked at this prostitute the same way David did Bathsheba. And because he had a problem with women. Remember what Jesus said in the Sermon on the Mount about lust there? That the man who looks upon a woman to lust after her. Like this is describing someone who is gazing upon a woman, who is looking at her portions and parts of her body he has no right to look at, it and gazing and doing what? Fantasizing. He commits adultery already in his heart. That's not a license, by the way, for divorce and remarriage or anything like that. I'm not saying that the man literally committed adultery. He committed it in his heart. He's thinking about it. He's fantasizing about it. And that's sin. We have to be careful about what we look at and places we go where sin is going to abound and just get us in trouble. We think, "Oh, it's okay. I'm strong enough." No doubt Samson thought he could handle all of this. He toyed with temptation. Someone has said that the only way you can give in to temptation is to do it. Whatever it is tempting you to do, give in to it. And that's the kind of attitude that gets people in trouble. But it's the kind of attitude that a lot of people have. And it causes people to be senseless. Autumn, go ahead. Right. Right. That's the Bible message. Flee. Flee. Flee youthful. Flee fornication. Just all kinds of things. Just, you know, we need to flee. So someone read Proverbs chapter 5 at verse 20. There's a lot of things as we look at the life of Samson that the book of Proverbs relates to with regard to him. But Proverbs chapter 5 and at verse 20, someone read that. Who would be silly enough to do that? Well, Samson's one man who would do that. And there's all kind of passages like that. So someone else read Hosea. Watch the connection here. Hosea 4 at verse 11. Hosea 4 at verse 11. This ties into what I said earlier about drunkenness and intoxication. Hosea 4 verse 11. Now think about that. What takes away the heart? Whoredom. And then wine and new wine. Well, everybody was, oh yeah, well yeah, wine. You know, what happens when a man gets drunk? He just does dumb things, doesn't he? His judgment is completely skewed. He has no ability to discern between things. But in that passage, whoredom is thrown in there. Because whoredom, sensuality, doing sinning and allowing lust to get the best of you, you become just like a drunken man. And you do senseless things. It's amazing to me when I hear on the news, see on the news, people, whatever it might be a politician, might be running, someone running from high office. It might be a religious person who's a head of one of these denominational churches or whatever. And they're in a great position. Their life is great. They have everything. And then they end up doing something silly like adultery. But they do it in such a way that you just wonder, you know, they leave a trail of text messages and things. And like, really? You don't think that's coming out at some point? They meet in public places in a day and age where there's cameras everywhere and every phone and around, and you don't think you're going to get caught? And these are smart men, lawyers and doctors and people who are very intelligent. But what happens? They're intoxicated by lust, and so they act senselessly. That's what would cause a Samson to go to the enemy's camp and look for a prostitute. He's intoxicated by sensuality. And he has been since we met him. And all through his life, he's never gotten over that. And it ultimately is going to lead to his death. And that's just the way the book of Judges. One thing we find, the book of Judges, the story doesn't always end well, does it, in these characters? It's the darkest book in the Bible, really. And such is the case with Samson. He loses his life because of this. And so it says that Samson went to Gaza, and there he saw a prostitute, and he went into her. So he commits adultery. The Gazites were told, Samson has come here. Like, even they were amazed. Like, who would have ever thought? You mean, you can just imagine these enemies here, the Gazites saying, you mean Samson's here? What's he doing here? Let's surround him. We're going to kill him tonight. Because they realize what a dumb thing to do, to come into the enemy's camp. Of course, Samson, now you remember all these characteristics that he has. Arrogance was one of them. He was very prideful. His guard was always down because he thought he could overcome anything. So you can just see him just strolling into the enemy's camp with no worries whatsoever. He doesn't feel vulnerable, but he is. He just doesn't realize it yet. So they find out that he is there, and so they surrounded the place and set an ambush for him all night at the gate of the city. They kept quiet all night, saying, let us wait till the light of the morning, then we will kill him. And the destructive nature of these Philistines, their ungodliness, all of that, and what they do here is a pretty good picture of what sin does to us. Surrounds us and waits, the lurking. But what does sin lead to? Death. Kills us. They weren't able to accomplish what they wanted to, but that's a good picture of sin. Sometimes we don't see it coming. It's quiet until it's too late. So, yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I was thinking about what Paul told the Corinthians there in 1 Corinthians 10, verse 13, that there's no temptation that's not common to man.
Right.
But God provides a way of escape. The trouble of it is we don't use it.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So it's there. It's a decision we make.
Right.
We decide whether we're going to get ourselves involved in it or not.
Right.
But it's always been. And it always will be.
Yep.
It's just a matter of, are we going to involve ourselves or not?
Right. And so there's two things there that Dale's talking about. First of all, we get ourselves into sin. Remember, that's what James said. Can't blame it on anybody else. We get into sin, give in to lust when we're drawn away. We give into sin when we're drawn away of our own lust. So we decide to do it. But there is a way of escape always if we are willing to take it. And too many times, this is just the nature of sin. It surrounds us. We get into it. And then we just feel trapped. And sometimes we don't realize it till it's too late. You think of all the people, the drunkard whose life is ruined because of his alcoholism. You think he feels the sting of liquor? Yeah. You think of the young woman who gives in to lust and gets involved in fornication and then can't have children because he contracts some kind of sexual disease. Think she feels the grip of immorality? Of course. And we could give example after example. The one who is dying of lung cancer because he has smoked all his life. He feels the sting of tobacco. And in all of the illustrations we can give, most of the time, at first, when you get involved in those kind of things, it's fun at first. You don't recognize that it is bad for you and that it's ultimately going to do a lot of damage to you. It's enjoyable. And it's not until it wraps around you and engulfs you that you think, man, I'm trapped in this mess and I can't get out. And that's another part of the sin. Because as Dale said, if you're a Christian, you can always get out. Even when you sin, all you have to do is repent. Ask God for forgiveness, and He will. And then dedicate yourself to God, and you can be free. But when you're in the midst of that sin, you just now feel hopeless. And all because you flirt with that sin in the first place, instead of fleeing and staying as far away from it as you can. Practical lessons we can learn from the life of Samson. He didn't do any of that, and it was all to his destruction in the end. So now he is surrounded by the enemy, and they're waiting, they want to kill him. But it says at verse 3, but Samson laid till midnight, and at midnight he arose. And he took hold of the doors of the gate of the city and the two posts and pulled them up, bar and all, and put them on his shoulders and carried them to the top of the hill that was in the front of Hebron. You just picture that. What an amazing picture that is. And you just think, I mean, this is just if you were going to think about Samson and his strength and just how he lived his life, this is a great picture of it. Like, here he is. He realizes that they're out there and they're thinking, now we have him surrounded. We'll wait till the morning, then we're going to kill him. And you can see him at midnight. He kicks the door open and walks out. He doesn't have any regard for the people around him at all. He goes right over to the gate and he picks up the gate, bar and all. I mean, these things are heavy. And carries them 38 miles about to the area of Hebron. I mean, what a picture of that. And gates, like when the enemy, if he wanted to, he could have busted out of there and just killed all those men. He's done that before, hasn't he? But he's given them a message. What do gates symbolize? Protection, security. He's given them a message. Y'all don't have any of that from me. Because he takes their gates. It is really a sign of victory. You remember how Jesus described his victory in Matthew chapter 16. Remember what was he going to do? What was not going to prevail against him? The gates of Hades. Because he'd be raised from the dead and he'd have victory over Satan and sin, over death. And so there's a symbol, there's a sign going on here with Samson. There's a reason why he did what he did. He just walked on out there and brazenly and again didn't even regard all those men out there, half of them probably half asleep and whatnot, but he tears up the gates and carries them to Hebron. And so, but what comes next? Verse 4 says, and after this, he did what? He loved a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. What keeps getting in his way? Women, over and over again. This was his life. He couldn't break free from it. He didn't want to break free from it. He could have if his mind was straight, but he just lusted so much. One woman after another. And now this happens very rapidly. And so his going after these women now is happening more rapidly. He's getting worse, not better. He's more emboldened than ever before. He's the judge, after all, but he's not acting much like a judge. And so he, this time it says that he loved a woman in the valley of Sorek. You know what the word Sorek means? Vine. This is a valley of vines. Fruit vines. What do we know about Samson? He's a Nazarite. He shouldn't be anywhere around the valley of vineyard or whatever. But he's shown in the past. He doesn't care about that. He doesn't care about his Nazarite vow. Therefore, he doesn't care about what God wants him to do. He wants to do what's right in his own eyes. So he goes down once again to a place he has no business going. And what happens? It says, after this, he loved a woman whose name was Delilah. And now you have a problem because this is even worse. You say, oh, at least he loves this woman. Does that make it better or worse? Yeah, that makes it worse. Now it's not just a fling. Now it's not just him trying to fulfill lust. He actually loves, at least the best he knows how, he loves this woman. And he's even going to be intoxicated by that. So he loves Delilah. And it says the lords of the Philistines came up to her. Now, notice how serious this is. His whereabouts now, everything he's doing, everybody knows all about it. It's not just the soldiers or anything. It's the lords of the Philistines now are involved. And they come up to her and said to her, seduce him and see where his great strength lies. And it seems as if he's an open book now. Everybody knows what his Achilles heel is. What he really has a problem. They've tried everything trying to conquer Samson. And, you know, they try to get back at him, maybe scare him a little bit by burning his wife alive and his in-laws. That didn't work. Do anything but make him mad, right? They tried binding him before, and that didn't slow him down. The only thing that has caused him to be vulnerable are women. And his first wife got to him. Now, Delilah is pretty much going to get to him the same way. And so these lords of the Philistines, they recognize, okay, we know we can't whip him. We know he has this supernatural strength and all of this. But I tell you what we can do, tell you what you can do, seduce him. That'll work. It may not work with everybody, but this will work with Samson. And in the end, they were right. So it says Delilah said to Samson, well, first, before that, they give him, they offer her 1,100 pieces of silver to do this. And so she They probably could have offered her a lot less. She probably would have done. But Delilah said to Samson, please tell me where your great strength lies. How you might be bound that one could subdue you. And Samson said to her, if they bind me with 7 fresh bowstrings that have not been dried, then I shall become weak and they be like any other man. Now, we'll get through. The bell's about to ring, but we'll get through the. But you know how this goes over and over. He doesn't tell her the truth, but she keeps coming back. And every time she betrays him, whatever he tells her, he goes gets the men. And as you're reading through this, you're really thinking, could Samson be that dumb? I mean, would you? He's telling her these things. There's no one else in the room but them. And he keeps waking up and someone else is there, knows his secrets and everything. And he keeps four times, I think, until 3 times. And then finally, the 4th time, he told her the truth. And you would think he'd have a clue, wouldn't you? But he's senseless. As I said earlier, we know from the whole story that Samson's really no dummy. He is smart, intelligent, clever, all of that. But how in the world does this happen? He's intoxicated. Smart people just act silly. What we'll discover is this whole thing to him is kind of a game he's enjoying. And so we'll talk about that. Go ahead, Dale.
That's what I was going to say. Oh, yeah. It was kind of fun to him.
Right.
He was not letting it call up
to him. It did. That's right. Which sin always does. And so whenever any kind of sinful situation starts to be fun, you start to enjoy it, you know you're in trouble. But the problem is sometimes you just don't figure that out before it's too late. But that's the situation with Samson. So we'll get into that and close it out next week because I did hear the second bell this time.